Exactly 20 years ago, Czechs and Slovaks were celebrating their first Christmas for four decades in an atmosphere of freedom and optimism. While the communists tolerated the trappings of Christmas, with Christmas trees and traditional Czech Christmas carp in abundance, their tolerance of Christian traditions was never more than skin deep. In the 1950s, priests and members of religious orders were often locked up for their beliefs, and the brief reforms of the 1960s were followed by another wave of persecution following the Soviet-led invasion of 1968. For this program, I'm going to be talking to two people who remember only too well what it meant to be a practicing Christian in communist Czechoslovakia. They're the Protestant pastor, former dean of the Protestant Theological Faculty of Prague's Charles University, and former dissident Jakub Trojan, and Jerry Turner, a British translator who has lived in Prague for many years and has had close links with the churches here since long before the fall of communism. Thank you both very much for talking to us here at Radio Prague. I'd like to ask both of you what it was like for a practicing Christian celebrating Christmas in the days of the 1970s and 80s, the period of normalization, whether it really was very different and much more difficult from how it is celebrating Christmas today. Jakub Trojan.
I cannot say it was particularly dangerous to celebrate Christmas. I think the whole existence of Christian churches and those who confessed Jesus Christ was, in the time of the communist era, not dangerous so in general, but a specific one. And it was, of course, an existence in a minority oppressed by the communist regime.
And the trappings of Christmas were there, weren't there? The Christmas trees, the carols, the things that you associate with Czech Christmases. But it was all very secular, wasn't it?
Yes, you are right. It was very secular. And I think we were not limited in celebrating in our churches, but it was typical strategy by the communists to confine the churches and church life into the churches as the buildings, not to a witness that would be manifested in public.
Were people actively discouraged from going to church? Your congregation, when people were coming to church, did they have the feeling that they could be disadvantaged as a result of this, that there was somebody maybe watching them, seeing them coming into church, who might report on them or in some way make their life difficult?
I think you are right. Particularly those who were in their jobs, they were afraid of losing their jobs. So practically the majority of those who attended the church services were older people.
And Jerry, over the years, you've spent a lot of time in originally Czechoslovakia, now the Czech Republic, in the period of communism. Do you remember that sense of there being control over people practicing their faith?
Certainly. We visited friends in the Czech countryside where one of the Czech pastors of the Evangelical Church of the Czech Brethren allowed a young student to give the sermon that day. And I remember it being a rather strong sermon. And
a strong sermon in what sense?
An outspoken sermon. And there was a sense of tension. Maybe it was subjective, but I think, no, there was a certain tension among the members of the congregation.
Did you find that, Jakub, that there was an element of self-censorship, that if you were preaching, that you would try to be cautious, maybe not so much to protect yourself, but to protect the people in your congregation from being in some way compromised in the eyes of the regime?
I was asked many times in this question. I personally must confess that I didn't feel myself too much limited. I preached God's word as I understood it and applied to the situation we were living in. So I didn't feel any limitation from outside. If there were any limitation, then this one, that I should properly preach on the God's word and not to miss the responsibility coming out from the preached word.
And Jerry, given that this is a Christmas program, we can't have a Christmas program without music. I'd like you to choose a piece of Czech Christmas music that means something to you.
All of my children have a Czech mother and an English father, but I elected to be part of a Czech culture in our family, and at Christmas, the youngest one would always sing Já malý přicházím, so I'm a little one coming to bear witness.
That was part of a traditional Czech carol, Já malý přicházím, I, little one, I'm coming to bear witness. Jakub Trojan, you're a pastor of the Czech Brethren. That's one of the Czech Protestant churches. How long have you been a pastor, and what actually are the Czech Brethren? Because they're a church that many of our listeners probably won't have heard of.
My church is the greatest one among the evangelical or Protestant churches in Czech Republic.
Today. So it's the biggest. How many members does it have?
Today, about 120,000.
So it's really quite a significant church in the country.
Yeah, I think it is. Not as to the membership, because we are only a minority compared with the Roman Catholic Church, which is the dominating confession in our country. But I think the meaning of our church is that it is profiled theologically based on the historical traditions going back to John Huss Reformation and the unity of brethren, and combined with the world Protestantism, with the Reformed tradition and Lutheran tradition. All these traditions are combined in our confession. So we are the church of having four confessions.
Were you brought up in the church, or did you choose to become a member of the Czech Brethren when you were an adult?
I was not born in the church. I joined the church in my age of 23rd year of my existence. I was baptized as a student of theology.
And this was not long after the Second World War?
Yes, that's right. It was in 1950. I was baptized and I officially joined the church.
And this was probably the worst possible time to be a Christian in Czechoslovakia. It was a time of the Stalinist purges against the churches in the country. You must have been going so much against the grain of where the majority of people in this country were heading, and the political atmosphere must have been very, very oppressive indeed.
That's right. It was not easy, but I must say the strategy of the communists first was aimed against the Roman Catholic Church as the major church in our country. So relatively, we as Protestants have a period, let's say, 8-9 years of not a peace, but we were not so heavily attacked as the Roman Catholics were at that time.
And how was it in the 1960s, at the time of the political thaw in Czechoslovakia?
I think the 60s were the most happiest years of our existence within the communist area. I mean, from the very beginning of the 60s up to the 1968, we were concerned As Christians, as theologians, we met very frequently. We discussed all the public issues. So we were very happy to be involved in this process of democratization.
And at the time, were you working as a pastor with a parish?
That's right. I was still in my parish. And I think all the Christians realized that perhaps this will be the time in which the Christianity as such will be recognized as a partner within the socialism. So I think the majority of the people still believe that socialism is perhaps a system which can be changed in a positive way, including the Christian tradition, and so becoming step by step more human.
And you yourself, did you believe this?
I must confess, we believe, and I personally believe that. But then, after the invasion, it was a shock. And
this was the Soviet invasion, yeah, when the tanks rolled in yes, August 1968.
Yes, and it was a sign for us, for myself, for my friends, that the socialism is never the option, the historical option we can believe in.
And I'd like to turn to the time just after the Soviet invasion, because one of the people who came to your church at the time of Christmas 1968, just after the Soviet invasion, was Jan Palach, a young student at the Philosophical Faculty in Prague, who a few weeks later set himself alight on Wenceslas Square in protest against what he saw as the way that people in Czechoslovakia were coming to terms with the Soviet invasion. He wanted to wake people up. And I'll read a short extract from something that you wrote about Jan Palach coming to your church. He came to the church at Christmas 1968 with his mother. It was something I can never forget. He had an unusual face that radiated something out of the ordinary. He was quite pale. I can remember precisely where he sat. And then he took part in the Lord's Supper. It was the second Christmas feast, the 26th of December. And when we were leaving the church, I stood at the door and shook everybody by the hand, as is our custom. While doing so, on that occasion, he said to me that the churches ought to do something in the situation we were in. There is no time for a lengthy conversation when taking leave of members of the congregation after a service, so in the 30 seconds during which we exchanged a few words, I was struck in particular by Jan's concern about how we were behaving. And then a fortnight later, there was the funeral of an uncle of his. The church was full, and he was present as one of the relatives. I preached on a text from Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, from Matthew's Gospel. "Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake," are the words I read. And on the 16th of January, it happened. I knew he had been in church because someone told me, but I hadn't seen him because there were about 250 people present. Jakub, that's something that you wrote, translated, I should add, by Jerry, sitting next to you. It is very, very moving, the story of what Jan Palach did. When you heard the news of his self-immolation, did you feel a sense of anger that he'd done it, or did you feel a sense of admiration? What were your first reactions?
For the first time, I was convinced that it is a sign that had to mobilize our spirits to be engaged in preserving the most important values of our life, and that his sacrifice was not in vain, because it had a power of a challenge that binds myself personally, and as I was convinced then, that has the power to bind all those who are sensitive enough to understand what happened.
One of the most powerful moments from the time of Jan Palach's death is his funeral. You were actually part of that, and it was an event where hundreds of thousands of people turned up in the streets of Prague, didn't they? It was really one of the last occasions, or probably the last occasion after the 1968 invasion, where the country really did seem to be together, unified, against what had happened. What was your role?
My role was just to say, at the end of the funeral, at the Olshansky Cemetery, the word about the meaning of what happened. And I tried it based on a word from Matthew Gospel that blessed are those who are persecuted for the justice.
And it must have been one of the toughest moments of your life, I should imagine.
I think it was. Since that time, I feel myself to be in a connection with Jan Palach in a specific way. That means I remember that he sacrificed himself for the sake of the whole nation, and I feel a responsibility to follow in some decisions I'm making the line he manifested in his death. That means not to imitate his deed, but to try to cope with the measure of his deed in order to fulfill some moral and spiritual demands.
And that sense of responsibility was what led you later to sign the Human Rights Manifesto, Charter 77.
Exactly. And it's significant to know that among the first to sign the Charter 77, there were 8 pastors, 8 ministers of our church.
And now we're going to hear another carol, a rather melancholy but very touching Moravian carol called Byla cesta ušlapaná, The Path Had Been Trodden, about the Virgin Mary walking in the snow towards the church and being told not to go to church, but that she has something more important to do to give birth to the Messiah. So that was part of the carol Byla cesta ušlapaná, The Path Had Been Trodden. I'd like to turn to Jerry Turner. When you first came to Czechoslovakia, when you first moved to Czechoslovakia, it wasn't long after the events of 1968, but at the time you actually came as an atheist, as a communist.
Indeed, I was at that time coming to terms with the God that I had been brought up with, the God of communism, the God who had failed so many others before. I came to work as a translator in Prague at a time when the atmosphere was drear. And yet I recall in those first weeks of January 1971, it was a typically Christmas landscape in Prague at the time. And I remember walking up Nový Svět,
which is a part of, near the castle, a very beautiful part of old Prague.
Indeed, a very, very picturesque little lane. And arriving at the top of the lane to find what is still for me one of the most beautiful and charming churches in Prague, which I didn't know at the time, but is the Church of the Capucins. And this was well late in January, it could have been February. And I was astonished to find, when I went into the church, that there were carols still playing. Of course, not having been brought up within a Roman Catholic tradition, I wasn't aware that celebration right up to Candlemas. But it made a very deep impression on me, even in those first months of being in the country.
And I understand that Jakub Trojan, who's now sitting next to you, was part of the process of your conversion to Christianity.
Yes, I came to know Jack at a time when I was already committed to working for the Democratic opposition in Czechoslovakia. I was back in England at that time. Already by that time, of course, I'd been closely connected with people in Charter 77 and was deeply critical of my former political views. And I was working for various Czech exile journals. At the time, I was a warden at a Quaker meeting house in England, and it was an English Quaker who asked me to translate some pieces by this Czech theologian, Jakub Trojan, and I agreed to do so. And so when I was asked by the editor of East European Reporter, Nancy Wood, if I would accompany her on a fact-finding mission to Prague, I naturally suggested that she meet with him. And we met in Prague, and he told us how to get to their Sunday service. So the two of us set out on a very dismal morning, also full of snow, in early December, and made our way to this small town on the outskirts of Prague in the dark, and just arrived in time at this very inconspicuous church. And we walked in the door just as a child was lighting the first Advent candle. There was Jack's wife, who was then pastor because his license had been revoked after he signed Charter 77. And I had an amazing sense of coming home.
Do you remember that day as well?
Yes. As he told the story, I remember it again. But I'm very thankful for the day he told the story again.
There's an irony, isn't there, in the sense of finding your faith in the middle of an overtly atheist state, really at a time when the regime had perfected materialism almost to a fine art, hadn't it?
Yes, but there's a strange way in which there's a natural human resistance to totalitarianism. In the same way, I think there's a natural human resistance to that sort of secularism. And there's a sort of folk piety which comes out in people, and I felt it came out very much at Christmas here, and it was very heartening. Christmas, in a sense, willy-nilly became a sort of demonstration that there was something beyond, that people's innate faith came out at that moment, and I did have a very deep sense of that.
And that really brings us to the present day, in a sense, because today you hear a great deal about the Czech Republic being, and it's often repeated as a cliche, the most atheist country in Europe. It's something that you see again and again in newspaper articles and all over the place. I'd like to ask both of you whether today, 20 years after the fall of communism, you think that that's really true. Jakub?
I have not so much trust to the statistics, because the statistics doesn't penetrate in the depth of human souls. So I wouldn't say that the Czech people are militant atheists, but they have some serious questions about the church-like Christianity. They are in opposition against the churches, or they are asking what is the purpose and what is the aim of Christian churches in our country. But they are not so doubtful about the Christianity, about the message of Jesus Christ, who gave himself for the sake of good and human life of the people.
Jerry, as I'm a deep believer in one thing, and that's serendipity, as you probably know, David. And on the way to this interview today, I happened to be reading the writings of an American Quaker from before the war, and he's writing about the state of secularism and so on in the world at that time. In front of me I have the sentence which says, "The world is full of seekers. They're not sentimental, ostentatious seekers, but baffled, confused, hard-headed, discouraged seekers, yet seekers nonetheless." I think that would amazingly say a lot about the state of mind of a lot of Czechs. There are a lot of seekers in this country.
I can't think of a better way, Jerry and Jakub, of ending our conversation for our special Christmas programme.